The Monologue.
A writer over at The Stranger, a failing alt weekly, a writer no one's ever heard of, Hannah Krieg, posted just some stupid hot take that deserves just a little bit of attention in that it shows you just how far to the left folks in the city of Seattle have become. Now, I don't even think she's an accurate reflection of, you know, the folks on the left. She's an accurate reflection of probably the folks who live on Capitol Hill, but constantly complain about the city of Seattle not being further to the left of Shamasawant. And in this case, she took issue with my story from yesterday showing the suspect caught on video stealing a 70-inch television from Target. And I called out the judge, Kuljinder Dhillon, for releasing this person, despite the fact that he is a prolific shoplifter, has decades of criminal charges under his belt. And Hannah Krieg wrote that she wants to buy Judge Dhillon a drink. Why? Because she doesn't see any problem with stealing. She says that she steals lip gloss. I can't tell if it's a joke because she's not particularly good at what she writes. She's not a good writer. So I can't really tell if it's a joke. But she said, Rance said this judge is notoriously easy on homeless people, which seems fair. Crime is often a symptom of poverty, and I think Target will survive the damage. But of course, so many people need a pound of flesh when a poor person does something silly that hurts no human person. So, of course, she doesn't know what she's talking about. She writes for a magazine. It's not even a newspaper, excuse me, not even a newspaper anymore. I think all they do is post online. A newspaper that had to beg people to donate money to it so that it would not go under. She apparently doesn't seem to believe that stealing things hurts anyone. Interesting. What's Target? They'll survive the damage. The thoughts of a stupid person. The thoughts of someone who doesn't actually have any. But she's supposed to always side with the homeless. This is a crime of poverty. Stealing a 70-inch television is a crime of poverty. I guess he must be hungry. And I hear there's high nutritional value in ultra-high-definition television sets. A crime of poverty. Many people need a pound of flesh when a poor person does something silly that hurts no human being. So if the person was rich and they stole it, I suppose she'd all be in favor of any sort of punishment, right? Even if it doesn't hurt anybody. Of course, it does hurt people. It hurts the stores. It hurts society by allowing for this kind of nonsense. This is someone who had shoplifted, according to the staff at Target, 22 prior times. And when a business can no longer operate, whether it's Target and Walmart or a mom-and-pop sneaker shop, guess what? They end up firing people. Low-wage, low-skilled workers end up losing their jobs because the company, big or small, can no longer justify keeping them employed if they're not making a profit because they keep getting things stolen. Something Hannah Krieg would never, of course, understand as an alt-weekly writer who I'm sure complains about not making a living wage whenever she can. And of course, if their business was targeted by vandals, they would call out the hate crime against the far progressive wing of the Seattle media elite. I'm assuming they would get upset that they would have to fix the broken window outside of their office and have to spend money that they don't have on things like that. But I mean, we should give them a pass. We should give them some sympathy, the kind that they're unwilling to give Target.
The interview.
Whatcom County Council Member Ben Ellenboss announced that he is running for the state Senate seat that was previously occupied by Doug Erickson, who passed away several weeks ago, making matters a little bit controversial, perhaps, is the fact that a Republican already holds that seat. Simon Sefcik was put into that role just a couple weeks ago. Joining me on the line is Councilmember Ben Ellenboss. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So you made the decision to throw your hat in the ring. Take us through your thinking.
Well, you know, ever since this whole process started, I felt overwhelming support from my friends and neighbors, and I believe in my ability to win and hold that seat, and I believe that my friends and neighbors do too, and it was their support that motivated me to run.
Do you feel like you got a fair shake from the council when they were making the appointment? Because you were one of the three names that was offered by the county party, and your colleague said to go with Sefcik.
Well, I think they showed me a ton of respect. I think respect for my resume and respect for how I'm viewed in the community and the support that I have. You know, I'm pretty sure that a lot of their decision was based off of them wanting to protect their candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it didn't cause me any hard feelings with my peers. I felt like it was a respectful move on their part.
Do you think they name Sefcik because they think he's easier to beat when the election comes around?
I think they named Sefcik because they knew how hard I would be to beat.
Yeah, but that's what I mean, right? I mean, they view you as this threat. They don't view him as the threat.
Oh, I'm sure they view him as a threat. He's a very talented and smart young man, and he's got a bright future.
So he's saying he's going to run for this race as well, for this seat once it's up. You've got Sharon Shoemake, who is the state representative, the Democrat right now in the district, announcing she's going to run. Is there any concern from you that the Republican vote would be split?
I don't think it would be split to the point that it's going to cause any issues in holding the seat. I think two strong conservatives in the race is going to create a lot of energy in the primary. And
mm-hmm.
I think we have more good conservative candidates out there right now for both the House seats and the Senate seat than we've had in a long time. And I think that's going to create energy and positivity.
What's the one issue that you would bring to the table in Olympia if you were in the Senate right now?
Right now, I would be focusing on flood relief. But as I look at the bills they have in the hopper, there is a lot of stuff that is not going to be helpful to my would-be constituents in the 42nd. That buffer bill it would be destructive. It would destroy agriculture in Whatcom mm-hmm. County. And quite honestly, that's not going to be good for water quality either. So.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bad things coming our way.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, we look forward to having you on in a lot greater detail on some of the issues once the campaign gets underway with a little bit more earnestness. We've been talking with Whatcom County Councilmember Ben Ellenboss. Thank you so much, as always, for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks for having me, Jason.
Now this.
The interview.
House Bill 1408 would expand public disclosure exemptions to minors whose voices are heard on 911 calls, including if the child is no longer alive. It's a bill that I think the supporters are well-intentioned. I just think this bill is a big mistake and ultimately a threat to press freedoms, but also a threat to public safety. Joining me on the line is a Republican who supports the bill, Representative Dan Griffey, Republican from Allen. He's also the minority whip, and he joins me now. Representative, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jason.
Why the support? Give us the big picture reason.
So I can give you a big picture. 1984, around there, we had a big thing happen in Mason County, and things that happen big in Mason County are small to others. But Ken Schramm came in and did this huge expose because the local paper was printing the names of some young minors who had rape allegations. And the person was subsequently convicted. But it was a huge community outcry of why the heck, in an evolved society, couldn't we find a way to protect the identities of people, especially younger children, who would be violated by adults. It's the number one reason why my wife, who was so brave, testified to in the statute of limitations on felony sex crimes, why her mother pushed her out here in Mason County to not come forward with the rape by her stepfather, because her name would be in the newspaper. It would get into the schools. The schools would then be able to haze and harass them about something that was terribly delicate. I really believe the bill has its flaws constitutionally. I agree that you should be able to face your accuser, but I think we are an evolved enough society where we can protect our children from that hazing and harassment, especially when it's adults that are causing the pain to them.
But that doesn't have anything to do directly with the extension of public disclosure exemptions. This is a bill that adds voices to the exemptions, meaning if I wanted to put in a public disclosure request for a 911 call and on the call it has a minor's voice, you're saying this bill says that that no longer can come to me.
Well, no, what would happen is it would be the voice would be the sound would be tweaked or a recording. A dictated recording or a typed summation of what was said. The actual call, it's kind of too traumatic, especially when it comes from such a young individual. And I'm just telling you where my heart came from.
Yeah.
Not that I think it's the best bill or the best written. I just think that all too often, in this society, we our kids grow up a little too quick. We expose them to too much stuff. And when it comes to things like this, maybe we can be a little more sensitive. Maybe the bill doesn't pass. But let's have the – if we're going to have benefit of the doubt conversations, when it comes to a child, let's err on the side of the child a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I think your reasoning behind it is sincere. Like I said, I think everything here is well-intentioned. To be clear, I mean, I'm looking at the language right now, and it says it would exempt from public disclosure the identifying information of a child and to not have identifying information, and that would include the voice. It doesn't necessarily say that it's going to change the voice. It just says that it would be the voice itself is considered identifying information, and thus it would be subject to an exemption. And it also would apply not just to someone who is living, but also someone who is deceased. I think you and I agree that there is a reasonable reason for a media outlet to want to get a hold of 911 information when, for example, it helps uncover abuse from the side of the 911 operator. That's how we find out some of the 911 operators acting inappropriately, is we actually get to listen to the 911 call. But on top of that, let's just say the subject who is calling 911 is reporting abuse done by a lawmaker who might support this bill. Isn't that a huge conflict?
Well, possibly. The bill doesn't contemplate any protections for identifying features of the adult. It does if it would help identify the child. And the idea is, if we're going to protect people and we're going to put extra protection on somebody, the people that deserve it the most is our most valuable treasured items, possessions, friends, family, loved ones. That's our children. And, you know, if I'm going to make a mistake on a piece of legislation, I'm going to make a mistake that errs on the side of a child and not on the side of us adults who then just get to argue.
What if that mistake hurts kids? What if the story that otherwise would have been told to highlight some kind of an abuse ends up stopping future abuse of children? or exploitation of, you know, whatever the subject happens to be. Isn't that part of the reason why so many folks in the media have pushed back? I don't know if any media outlet supports this. I know there was a hearing last week in which media outlets spoke overwhelmingly against this particular bill. It's possible that one supports it. They just haven't testified publicly. In fact, there was only one person who testified in favor of this bill.
Well, Jason, I would appreciate it and love it. I would hate it if we prevented a conviction, number one. Number two, I'd appreciate it if we could have an agreement and that the media would get this information and agree that they won't publish the name and address, telephone numbers of people, the minors, that have cases of rape or other abuse.
How often does that happen?
Alleged. What's that?
How often does that happen?
It happens.
How often does it happen? Yeah, I mean, it is incredibly rare, especially, I mean, at least from a, let me just make this one point, and I'll give you the response. Just from the perspective of legitimate media organizations, that doesn't happen, what you just said, or it's incredibly, incredibly rare. It's certainly possible that, you know, bloggers might do something like that. That I certainly concede that, and I'll let you respond.
Yeah, and there is the case. I just don't want it to ever happen, right? And again, I am a constitutional conservative, and I understand that I am in a gray area, that freedom of the press would set us free. But you will as well know that coverage these days are, well, let's just say they vary.
Sure.
And there are good players, and there are not so good players as far as giving the information.
Yeah, but as a constitutional conservative, you don't want to limit words, right? So bullying is wrong. We hate it. We don't want kids to be bullied. Sometimes kids get bullied. We don't then say, well, we're going to ban some words because it's too hurtful.
No, you don't, Jason. But you certainly don't want to have somebody who was brutally raped by their stepfather because the local newspaper at that time printed all those that identified.
Yeah, but again, that has nothing to do with this particular bill. But that is the bigger issue that you're talking about. This is specific to voice, this particular bill.
Yeah.
So that does not apply.
And identifying specific traits. So being able to identify a minor that brings something like that up. And the idea by the voice was the voice could be recognized by the person that then could, find them, stalk them, and do harm to them.
So why doesn't
that
same and again, I understand, but why doesn't then that same protection? Why? What's the argument against extending that protection to an adult and not having their voice heard? You don't want them to relive the trauma.
The assumption, I don't want any sexually violated individual to have to relive trauma. I really don't. I believe that printing such information before the trial and before there is a finding, a jury of their peers, dilutes the situation. But again, on this one, I might be a little bit hypocritical, but I think we as an evolved society at least should have the conversation about where we go when it comes to testimonies, the 911 calls, the personally identifiable information for minors. I just think we should have at least the conversation.
I agree with you on that.
The floor,
when
it comes to the floor, Jason, I believe it'll probably be in a different format, or if it doesn't come to the floor. But this is one thing with all the work that I've done in this area that I can't back down on. If there's another way to find something that can protect and help our young ones, our most cherished ones, through the toughest of times in their life, I'll err on that side. Again, that's what the process is for. We listen to the press and we'll let the press tell us in all the committee hearings what their concerns are. We deliberate deliberatively, and then we make some decisions on that. And you're making good arguments, and again, it pulls at instead of thinking with my heart, thinking with my conservative mind, I get where you're coming. I don't want to limit a free press, never have. But what I want to do is find ways that we can protect our youngest are going through the worst possible experience through that.
Absolutely. And I think everyone shares that wish. We just have to be able to do that without stifling free speech and a free press. And, you know, at some point, there is a conflict. And the constitutionality aspect is supposed to come out on top. But I certainly hear your perspective, and I certainly respect it. I get it. And as I've said this entire time, I think it comes from the right place. I just don't think it's the right move when it's weighed against the rights of the press or anyone to have access to this information. But again, I hear you, and I'm glad you're willing to have that conversation. I think that part is completely fair. I think all of us should be able to have a conversation, a debate, a civil one, on this particular issue. And I'm so grateful that you did that just now with me. State Representative Dan Griffey, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Jason.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Now this.
The Jason Rand Show.
Jason Rand has followed that in detail. He's a radio host in Seattle. He broke this story. He joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion, Jason. Definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. He laid that down.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
The situation, as far as crime goes in Seattle, especially the downtown Seattle core, continues to deteriorate. Every single day, we've got another story of something happening, shoplifting, assault. Not just passersby getting impacted, not just the people who live in and around the area, but it's the folks who work there, who operate businesses. Yesterday, we brought you the story of a sneaker company deciding to call it quits after some 20 years in a location right across from Pike Place Market. Why? Because of the crime. Joining me on the line is someone who knows all too well, unfortunately, how bad the situation is. Jay Ashberg is the owner of Seattle Shirt Company and joins me now. Jay, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What has it been like over the course of the last several years, including just kind of pre-COVID with crime?
So the last couple of years, we had issues now and again over the last 30 years. But in the last couple of years, it became obvious to us that we needed a full-time daytime security guard at the door as a deterrent and somebody, you know, to help stop shoplifting and, you know, violent people come in, drug addicts, mentally ill people. You know, we're right there on the corner, so everybody just comes in. So we need protection. And this is just basically in the last couple of years.
Yeah, and what I think people will see, not just with you, but pretty much every business there, they're all doing the same thing. I was walking around the area just a couple weekends ago, and I just noticed way more security right at the doorway to the store, which, you know, from a customer perspective, probably not what you want to see when you're walking in, but I get it. I understand.
Right, right. It's just, yeah, it's crazy, like, what has become. And then in just the last year with COVID, or last 2 years with COVID, and it's just all these empty stores are being replaced by, you know, homeless and tents and then less police. Mm-hmm. So it just escalated to not a great situation.
What has your store been dealing with as far as actual crimes, not just the threat of crimes?
So, you know, during the day, we've got, you know, people trying to shoplift all the time. And then at night we've had, there's been in the last, 3-4 months, we've had our glass broken 3 or 4 times and 3 actual burglaries. And 2 were literally one night after the next, 2 nights in a row. And then 1 was like 3-4 months ago. So we've had 3 burglaries, but we've never in 30 years had any burglaries at all.
Yeah. How do your employees feel?
Well, I mean, some of them enjoy working there, but others are scared. We've had issues. And it's just, it's tougher to find people, tougher to find staff at that store than it is. We have a store on Pier 55 and Pier 56, as well as Leavenworth. And it's just First and Pike is definitely a different animal than down by the pier.
What have the conversations been like, if they've been reciprocated, with the city, with your council member?
So I had a meeting with a bunch of people on the waterfront with Andrew Lewis, but I wasn't able to attend because I ended up meeting with Ann Davison and Scott Lindsay for a few minutes, the new city attorney and deputy city attorney. And that was great. I feel like the new regime, the new mayor, I mean, I haven't met the new mayor, but Ann Davison and Scott Lindsay, I feel like they're good people and they really want to make a difference, but there's been so much damage that's done. Like, how long is it going to take and how much power do they have? Because they still have to deal with the city council, with Sawant and all her followers. And it's crazy. So, I mean, I feel like unless we flipped the city council, I'm not sure how much fight they're going to have.
Yeah, and I think that's an astute observation. We're talking with Jay Asperg, by the way, he's the owner of Seattle Shirt Company. We're talking about the deteriorating circumstances surrounding his neighborhood that he operates in. He's got a store right by Pike Place Market. It's constantly being the victim of harassment of homeless people who are dealing with mental health issues, drug addiction. He's getting burglarized. Customers obviously are not feeling all that comfortable because I've spoken to quite a few who walk the area. You know, you're right in that no matter what Ann Davison does, Seattle City Attorney, there's still some issues that she can't control. Number one, Seattle Police Department staffing is at all-time lows, historic lows. And so even if you call 911, they might not be able to show up in time to make an arrest. If they make an arrest, if it's a felony charge, it's definitely not going to go anywhere. Generally doesn't go anywhere. It gets to Seattle City Attorney's Office that has a huge backlog. At the same time, you've got the council that refuses to get at the root cause of why the burglaries are happening to begin with. So from your perspective as just a business owner, how much longer will you deal with this? How much longer will you put up with it?
Well, I'm looking at the next year, and I really feel I saw the article on Sneaker City, and I was reading all the Twitter comments, and I said to my wife, I'm like, wow, there's just hundreds of comments, and every one of them is saying the same thing, that Seattle has, you know, it's not the city it used to be. It's not recognizable anymore. And it's like everybody wants to get out and be done. So I'm looking at all this, and I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, like how – I'm going to look at this next year, and if our numbers go down at First and Pike, and I don't really see, I see this thing not turning for a long time, then I seriously have to consider being another one of those businesses that are going to close there. I mean, I don't want to. It's a great store. It's been a great store. But it's just, it's too much aggravation. It's too much stress. It's not worth it. I have to enjoy what I do. And, you know, for 30 years I have. And at that store right now, it's not enjoyable. This is not what I signed up for. I should be able to make a living, do what I do, give people jobs, you know, all that, supply great product to tourists and whatever they want, crack in Jersey. But having to deal with this, it's just, I'm 56 years old. It's not worth it at this point.
Where do you think the disconnect is? We just did a segment. Hannah Krieg, I guess is her name, over at The Stranger. She wrote about a story I did yesterday on the shoplifter at the nearby Target, which is not very far from your store. He pulls out a 70-inch TV. He ends up getting arrested, and I called out a judge who goes easy on him. And so on The Stranger... They write that Rant said this judge is notoriously easy on homeless people, which seems fair. Crime is often a symptom of poverty, and I think Target will survive the damage. But of course, so many people need a pound of flesh when a poor person does something silly that hurts no human person. I mean, she is, and this is a Alt Weekly that begged people for money so that they could stay in business. So apparently they have some understanding of what it might be like to be constantly under siege. But she's basically saying that it's cool, it's okay, because no one gets hurt. So when they break into your store and they steal your product, so long as no one gets hurt, no harm, no foul. Where's the disconnect?
Right. This is it's crazy. And this is what we're dealing with in Seattle. I mean, it's crazy. How did we even get here? I don't understand why it's mutually exclusive. I realize there's racism in the police force and there's work that needs to be done. But why do you have to cut the police force in half? The city council has no respect for small business owners and what we do. So I don't get why they can't have education for the police force to prevent tragedies like what happened with George Floyd, and at the same time protect the taxpaying citizens that are just trying to make a living, protect the people, the customers that want to come down here, protect our tourists. Industry that is a huge part of Seattle. I would love to sit down and talk with one of these city council members that are far left and ask what's in their head. Why? How did we get here? Are they happy? Is this what you wanted? Is this what you were hoping for? Really?
I can tell you the answer. Like, I can tell you the answer to that because let's be clear. The reason why so many people are breaking the law is because they can, right? There are no consequences to it. So the reason why ideologues on the council continue to push these policies is because they can. There's no real pushback. You're not leaving yet. You haven't left. You're still going to pay your taxes the way you're supposed to. You're still going to be a responsible business owner. And thus, there are no consequences to a policy that or policies in this case that are allowing this to run rampant. The council hasn't seen enough people push back. And that's not even just business owners, right? That's the literal voters.
Well, most of the people that have businesses in downtown, I mean, I'm an example. I don't live in Seattle, so I can't even vote. But my question is 500 businesses, street level businesses, according to the DSA, have closed since 2020. And it's not just because of COVID. So when people say that,
it's a silly statement from people who don't know what the hell it is they're talking about.
Right. So my question is, people like Sawant and all these others, do they walk downtown and see, you know, Ann Taylor Loft, Columbia, all these huge businesses that have closed? Do they look at it and say, you know, the corner of Fifth and Pike? How long is that store going to be vacant? I mean, the lost tax dollars and sales tax alone that we collect and pay. This is my question. I mean, I realize you say there's no pushback, there's nothing, but when you say pushback, because people will continue to vote for them, is that what you mean?
They're still in office, aren't they? I mean, the last election was some course correction, right? And I'm grateful for it. But Shama Sawant survives a recall. You've got folks like Teresa Mosqueda, who's still on the council. She gets reelected. There is not enough pushback yet. And I don't know when that's going to happen. I always think that we've hit rock bottom and that finally the voters are going to say enough is enough. And then the same thing happens over and over again with some movement in this last one. I'll grant you that.
Well, I realize she just lost she didn't get the recall by a couple hundred votes, but she is coming up for reelection in a year. So that'll be a true test. If she gets reelected in a year, we've got some. I mean, this is going to continue.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
it's outrageous. We've been talking with Jay Ashberg. He is the owner of the Seattle Shirt Company. If you want to help support this business, obviously you can go down to one of their locations, but maybe it's safer to go on seattleshirt.com for those of you who don't want to make the drive into the city of Seattle. Seattleshirt.com is where you go if you want to help support them and check out some really cool shirts. I mean, you've also got some Kraken gear that you're selling, so people love that stuff. Jay, thank you so much for stopping by, as always. Really do appreciate your willingness to tell us your story.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jason.
Have a great day. You as well. Again, it's seattleshirt.com. Now this.
The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
There's a story out of Tennessee that deserves our attention because it's another example of ideologues choosing to ban books for the wrong reasons. There's certainly going to be circumstances in which educators, school boards, politicians, whomever are making the decision to change the curriculum because of various reasons. It doesn't fit, it's no longer accurate, whatever it happens to be. There's a better option. And I think that is fair to happen. It's the reasons behind something happening that I generally take issue with. Now, locally, you saw in Mukilteo them banning To Kill a Mockingbird because the character who is the hero is white, and it's a white savior, and that it's not written by someone who's black. That's a horrible reason to get rid of a book. It's a disturbing reason to get rid of a book. The same way we would call it disturbing if we said, well, we shouldn't have that book because it's written by a black person. That's called racism. In this case, the McKinn County School Board out in Tennessee voted unanimously to ban a book called Mouse, M-A-U-S. It's a book about the Holocaust. And they cited concerns over the language that was used and a nude drawing of a woman that was part of it. There's a total of 8 curse words in Mouse. Huh. Tony Allman is a board member there. He said he was concerned about scenes in the book where mice were hung from trees and children were killed. The book also depicts suicide. He said, why does the educational system promote this kind of stuff? It's not wise or healthy. Hey, dum-dum, they're not promoting the Holocaust. They're not promoting suicide. They're not promoting killing children. They're telling you the reality of the Holocaust. These are folks who are conservative who are making this position, taking this position. And so I'm more than willing to call out conservatives who do the same kind of ridiculous stuff that the left does. In this case, it was for 8th graders. 8th graders can handle an honest conversation about the Holocaust. It's important for them to understand the Holocaust. And for them to go ahead and pull this is disturbing. It was a point that was made by State Representative John Clemens, the Democrat from Nashville.
Books are being stripped out of public libraries that give detailed personal accounts from survivors and about victims of the Holocaust.
And he says we shouldn't be whitewashing this.
They want to protect their children from the realities of our nation's history and world history. And it's counterproductive. And the reality is, when you whitewash history, you don't have an appreciation for the perspective of others. You don't have empathy. You don't understand from where others are coming. And you don't know what history is all about.
He's 100% correct. And I will give him credit as a Democrat, because sometimes Democrats take the right position. He's taking the right position here. Anyone who's trying to ban books under this absurd reason of, oh, well, I don't like its content, that's not good enough unless you're telling me legitimately that the content is inappropriate for the age group and simply saying, well, there are 8 curse words and there's death. Yeah, it's the Holocaust. It's the Holocaust. This isn't being given to kids or kindergartners. If it was given to kindergartners, I'd agree. A little bit too much. That's not what this is about. This is the wrong move, and it's just as wrong as what folks on the left did in Mukilteo, getting rid of To Kill a Mockingbird, which, by the way, has not been banned at this particular school district.
The Last Rants.
And with that, I hope to see folks over at the Roanoke Conference tomorrow. I will be the host of a panel, and the panel is about the government overreach that we're experiencing here in Washington State, courtesy of Jay Inslee. There are a pair of bills that are going to the emergency powers concern, but we'll also be talking about the taxes, the long-term care tax, the capital gains tax, the threat of an income tax. There'll be a lot of interesting conversations to be had over the course of the weekend, but especially during my panel. So remember the rules that if you see me and I'm totally alone, you are not to say anything to me. But if I'm with people, you're supposed to say, oh my God, that's Jason Rantz. I'm kidding. I look forward to meeting everybody tomorrow in Ocean Shores at the Roanoke Conference. It's the Jason Rantz Show.